I've never been.
There we go.
We call the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources to order. This is Thursday, March 16th, and we've got a quorum here. So while we have one, let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2469. And we're going to ask Representatives Holvey and Marsh to join us at the dais. First, we have about 30 people to talk, so we're going to try and have everyone go for no more than 3 minutes, then everyone should be able to talk. I know some will be less, but if you can try and keep 3 minutes in mind as your magic number, that would mean everybody will get to talk. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair Klim and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Pam Marsh. I'm the representative from Ashland, Talent, Phoenix, Medford, Jacksonville, and the Fertile Applegate Valley. It's District 5. In May 2014, I proudly cast a vote in support of Measure 15-119, a local initiative in Jackson County that would ban genetically modified or otherwise known as GMO crops. The measure passed with two-thirds of the vote. A phenomenal outcome for a David and Goliath grassroots effort. But like other voters, I understood that the traditional and organic seeds and crops grown by our local family farmers were vulnerable to the threat of possible cross-pollination from genetically modified seeds. Our productive Rogue Valley lands provide a perfect growing environment. But the strong winds that course through the narrow valley can easily carry GMO contamination, making the seeds and crops that are touched unsellable. 3 years after that vote, my neighbors are thriving. Like their peers in other GMO-free regions, Jackson County farmers are exploiting a growing local, national, and even global demand for non-GMO seeds and crops. Unfortunately, all of those other regions are someplace other than Oregon. Legislation passed in 2013 preempted cities and counties from setting their own rules over seeds, effectively blocking local ordinances around GMOs. In contrast, House Bill 2469, under consideration today, will remove that preemption and allow local governments to protect GMO-free agriculture by regulating or preventing the production or use of non-GMO seeds and plants. I've been a fan of Jackson County's ban since it was enacted, but now as a member of the legislature, I have a much broader position on the issue. Along with Chair Klim, I serve as a member of the House Economic Development and Trade Committee. And with that assignment, I now see everything, including this issue, through the lens of economic development. Clearly, a community's ability to develop its agricultural sector through the strategic use of GMO-free zones can be a tremendous tool for many of our rural counties. Mounting evidence demonstrates the strengths of the non-GMO market. When Oregon wheat, a significant agricultural export for this state, was threatened by GMO contamination a few years ago, we saw a near crisis in the industry since the global markets require a non-GMO product. In another example, seeking market share, General Mills recently introduced Cheerios as a non-GMO food. And just this morning, the Business Wire stated, "The global non-GMO foods market is growing at a steady pace. The increase in the number of health-conscious people and increasing demand for non-GMO food products by middle-class families are the primary reasons for the growth of the market. The rising demand for organic food products has also increased the demand for non-GMO food products from consumers. It seems short-sighted at best to constrain communities that wish to pursue this expanding sector. Conversely, empowering local residents and elected officials to make the decisions that fit their communities and fuel growth in their economies makes good sense." You have a long lineup of experts to speak on this issue this morning, and I'll defer questions to all of them. But I do want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you and for your consideration of this measure.
Thank you. Representative Holvey, welcome.
Good morning. Chair Klim, members of the committee, thanks a lot for allowing us to testify on this bill today. I think Representative Marsh, you know, gave most of my testimony this morning, so I'm going to be relatively short. But I do want to, you know, go back to 2013, and I know it was a contentious issue in the legislature in the special session. that ended up preempting local governments, you know, from further action on GMOs. But with that, you know, we were sort of led to believe that cross-contamination would somehow, you know, be addressed through the Department of Agriculture, largely to help protect this growing part of the industry. And, you know, in my county, Lane County, we have a, you know, part of our economic development strategy, our sector strategy, you know, one of the things they've picked is food and beverage. And part of that is the organic farms and the organic produce that's and herbs and all those specialty crops that are produced. And we have wholesalers there that specialize in organic products. You know, and the threat of cross-contamination can, you know, really have a huge negative impact on their whole crop, their ability to sell. And so, you know, if the state isn't going to figure out a way to have some GMO-free zones to help protect this thriving part of the agricultural industry, I think it's growing exponentially faster than most other types of crops. You know, I think we ought to allow local governments to have that control to make those choices. I just am, you know, it is an economic issue right now. Like it or not, organic foods are, you know, really in high demand, especially in my community. And we have a lot of local farmers who specialize in organic crops. And the threat of cross-contamination could take down that whole industry, which is part of our economic development strategy in Lane County with food and beverage and specializing in those sorts of crops. So I won't say any more. I think Representative Marsh summed it up pretty well, and I'll let other people testify to this. But I hope this committee can, you know, try to find some sort of solution if this is not it. Thank you.
Any questions for these two?
Thank you.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Representative Hovey, you mentioned organic growth, exponential growth. So do you know what the percentage is of crops that are grown organically and then GMOs in your district?
No, I don't. I'm sure there's people behind me or that will come up to testify on that. I just, you know, have talked to many of the wholesalers that from our area that you know, buy and sell these products, and it is one of the fastest growing parts of our county, you know, as far as economy goes in the agricultural sector. And like I said, it's one that our county is focusing their economic development on. So, you know, if it's not allowing, you know, the local government to make these decisions and lift that preemption, then, you know, I plead with the Department of Agriculture, this committee, or somebody else to come up with a way to protect this industry from cross-contamination. It's just that simple. You can talk to other people about the numbers. I don't remember them off. I've heard them before, but I'm, you know.
And one thing we should probably clarify, just to make sure we're all using the same terms, organic includes GMO-free, but GMO-free doesn't necessarily mean organic.
Oh,
it can, but
yeah,
it
I know that as well.
Yeah, I just want to make sure everybody knows. Okay. Great. We will probably not do a ton of questions for other people, but since we've got our colleagues here representing 60-some thousand people each, I thought we'd at least have the opportunity. Okay, great. Representative Wilson, could you join us? And then we will get to public testimony right after this.
Chair Clem and members of the committee, Carl Wilson, House District 3, Josephine County. Over the past several weeks, I have received many, many letters urging me to take a position on House Bill 2469, a bill that would once again declare Josephine County a GMO-free zone and allow other local governments across the state to enforce GE seed bans as well. And I want to thank everyone for the polite tone of the letters. It has been outstanding. I've also heard from a number of farmers who have urged me not to support House Bill 2469. Along the way, I have been reminded of the spring of 2014, where citizens of Josephine County voted resoundingly to ban the cultivation of genetically engineered crops within the county. I realize that it has been the desire of many to have Josephine County be a GMO-free zone. I'm also aware of the legislative action taken in response to Josephine and Jackson County votes resulting in nullification of the GE crop ban in Josephine County. I've attempted to do my due diligence. I've read numerous publications on the topic, including the governor's task force report. I've also read completely the document produced by the National Academy of Sciences. We talk about following science all the time, and I chose to do that, and I consumed that report with much glee. I have tried to take as many meetings as I possibly could with individuals and advocates, farmers of every stripe, the Department of Agriculture, the Farm Bureau, local businesses, people involved in the industry. And sadly, there seems to be no middle ground at the moment. Both groups of farmers believe that they ultimately will be ruined if one side prevails. The fact that peaceful coexistence is practiced successfully in nearly every other farming community in the country seems to mean nothing at present. But with that said, I am concerned about the possible impact of GE crops such as bent grass in eastern Oregon getting away from test plots, jumping rivers. That very scenario is of great concern to grass seed growers in the Willamette Valley, as most of you know. I realize that cross-pollination can occur among conventional farmers as well. Once again, I believe that the best plan is peaceful coexistence. Farmers all over the state have learned to communicate, rotate, have pinning programs. There's a process for farmers who receive injury. I'm not sure GE seed bans are appropriate public policy in all communities. But if this bill does make it to the House floor, I will support this bill. By a significant majority, in a public vote, the people of Josephine County said they wanted local government to be able to enact a GE seed ban. I am their representative, and I will support them in their desires. Thank you.
Any questions for our colleague?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Wilson. Okay, so I'm going to start. We'll do, not that everyone can't get along, but we're going to try and keep the panels together and for and against so there's no kicking under the table. And we're going to start with Elise Higley, Ivan Maluski, and Dr. Ray Seidler in the four category. And you'll see the timer up there. That's a new entity, new. I've never seen that before, so hopefully it's not too distracting. But
what that was?
Yeah.
The stoplight.
Yeah. Just a little accountability mechanism, apparently.
Great. That's great.
Giant doomsday clock hovering over your head.
Try not to lose. Okay. Good morning, Chair Klim. Thank you, committee, for listening to us today. It's been about a year ago that we were here last spring during our planting season. My name is Elise Higley. I'm a farmer in Southern Oregon, and I'm also the executive director for Our Family Farms, which represents thousands of Oregonians who are also concerned about traditional seed supply and protecting farmers from genetically engineered the threats of genetically engineered crops pose. The risk that GE crops will contaminate traditional crops is very real. I plant corn seed on my farm, and if it gets contaminated because a farmer down the road grows genetically engineered corn, I won't be able to sell or save my seed under federal patent law. It wouldn't be a sound business decision to simply ignore federal patent law and hope that Monsanto does not file patent suit against me. Besides the legal issues, my buyers, like many other buyers around the world, will not buy my crop if it's contaminated. It's not about a loss of organic certification. It's about the economic loss of the sale of my seed that would have been sold. It's a loss of my farm's reputation for future seed contracts. It's a loss of a year and even two sometimes to grow out a crop for my seed harvest. It's a loss of the actual seed stock supply that our farm and other farmers have been working for generations to preserve. It does not make fiscal sense to grow a crop if you know the likelihood of GE contamination is present. This is the current state of affairs in farming today. GE farmers end up winning by default, and every year our traditional seed supply diminishes. In return, traditional seed becomes more expensive, and GMO-free food becomes more expensive. To address these issues, we talked about the local control and this bill being a way to come up with local solutions. You know, some are going to argue today to prevent local communities and localities from coming up with solutions that that address their own unique problems. The argument that farms straddle county lines is going to be talked about. But the real value in allowing local farms and local jurisdictions is that they can actually make farms exempt that straddle county lines. We're going to talk, people are going to say, we can't have a patchwork. And I'm saying, so what if there's a patchwork? There's all kinds of patchworks with different policies, and they're working just fine. Please don't buy into the scare tactics that are going to be said today. The passage of this bill means that districts will have to move forward with it, don't have to move forward with a new policy. Really, nothing has to even change with this bill passing except for Josephine County's vote being honored. What is the other option is my question. Do we go with our current approach? Do we do nothing again? Do I come back next year again waiting for my seed crops to be at jeopardy and stop farming seeds that are at risk? I say let's not let this happen. Oregon has too much to offer. No doubt there's going to be heated debates today. There's scientists on both sides arguing the pros and cons, whether GMO is good, whether GMO is bad, whether we can work together, whether we can't. The question is not that. The question is whether we can go back to the way it's been since the beginning of the foundation of Oregon and have local communities vote on their agricultural needs. And I feel like that is the best solution since the state has really showed a regulatory void and has left family farmers and the economy at risk. And so I'm asking you, please, to not buy into all these pros and cons. And the good news is you don't have to make a decision on whether you agree, because I can tell you today we can argue for the rest of the session every day here, and we all probably would not agree and walk out on the same page. So we don't have to decide that today. We can look at Josephine and Jackson County as examples. It wasn't that they were deciding that GMO crops were bad or good. They looked at what was important for the future of their valley, and that's what we're looking at today. What is the future of Oregon? What do we want to be known as? Do we want to see a diminishing seed supply here, or do we want to be a beacon to show that we're supporting family farmers and we don't have to get our seed from across the world to get GMO-free seed? So I'm urging you to support this bill, to support family farmers, and to support traditional seed supply. Thank you for your time.
Hi, good morning. I'm Ray Seidler, and I live in Ashland, Oregon, and I'm here to support Bill 2469. About me first, I studied the biosafety risks of genetically engineered microorganisms and plants for about 30 years. About 17 of those years, I was employed by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency as a research scientist. My job was to develop, through research, test methods and evaluate of the risks, potential risks of genetically engineered plants, including crops. So in 1992, I wrote a plan. We brought scientists together from around the world, from Europe, from throughout the United States, and they critiqued a plan that I wrote, and it was published in this international journal called Molecular Ecology. 9 of the 15 papers that those scientists submitted all raised the issue of concerns about cross-pollination. In 1994 now, we're talking, when this was published, cross-pollination between GE and non-GE crops. And let's do research in the area. So in those days, not one scientist, including myself, Now, one scientist, including myself, anticipated what we know about the distances that pollen can spread today, let alone the economic and legal repercussions. We're going to hear all day about the issues in Central Oregon with the bent grass. Hey, I'm here to tell you that's a looming financial disaster, and we need to pay attention to what's going on over there. In addition to the bent grass, we also know that major crops spread their pollen naturally, wind, honeybees, 1 to 5 miles. Not disputed, not debatable, scientific facts. That doesn't even include what happens with vehicles and farm equipment movement. So, of course, it's not practical to ask all farms to be separated by 1 to 5 miles. That's not what I'm trying to suggest. But what is proven to work in California and in Southern Oregon is the establishment of GMO-free zones. On a related topic, I want to also say that claims that you may hear today about USDA deregulated crops are safe only means that they do not contain a DNA element that could be a pest to other plants. Has nothing to do with the problems associated with cross-pollination. Furthermore, what I've told you just now should, I hope, provide credible arguments that cross-pollination problems cannot be solved by a farmer handshake. Not. So, in finishing, local farmers know what works best. They need your help. They need your help to be able to apply the practices that they know best about, as you just heard from Elise. So please, give them options. Give local farmers the option. That's all we ask. To be able to farm the way that they would like to farm and their particular district, area, zone, county in the state of Oregon. Please support this bill 2469. Thank you.
Welcome.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, Ivan Molesky with Friends and Family Farmers. We represent small and mid-sized farms across Oregon, and we're here to testify in support of House Bill 2469 today. I served on the governor's task force on genetically engineered seeds and agricultural products in 2014 in hopes of finding solutions to longstanding problems with lax oversight of GE crops at the state and federal levels. We're testifying in support of the bill today because after 3 years, we continue to have inaction from the state of Oregon, the Oregon Department of Agriculture. And because of this continued absence of a sensible state-level approach to these issues, we should not continue to block local communities from moving forward. The issue of Roundup Ready bentgrass is going to be talked about, but I would say this. Oregon has, in fact, established a control area for Roundup Ready bentgrass to keep it out of the Willamette Valley. That tells you that the state of Oregon has, in fact, determined that genetically engineered crops can be a menace to agricultural industries. That's the language of the control area statute, is if a crop can be a menace to other crops, it can be regulated. However, the ODA has taken a very strange position that says if the federal government has deregulated a crop like they have recently with bentgrass, state authority goes away. So I want to give you that context. So after years of state inaction, this is the core of my testimony. You've submitted it for the record. It is time to restore local control to protect farmers. Because ODA is unwilling or unable to use its existing authorities to protect farmers most impacted and concerned about contamination from genetically engineered crops, the legislature should have dropped this bill. Blocking both the state of Oregon and local communities from adopting laws or rules based on local growing conditions does not make sense. In the continued absence of state action, local rules are the only way to provide meaningful protection for farmers threatened with contamination from genetically engineered crops. Local governments and local farmers deserve the right to shape locally appropriate protections. As has been shown in Jackson County, such local farmer protections are consistent with Oregon's right to farm laws. In fact, they don't have to be a ban. A local initiative could be something like codifying required set-asides and buffer distances that some private organizations already use. So without concrete protections in place, the ability of farmers in Oregon to raise seeds and crops that are not contaminated by GE seed or pollen will be eroded over time. Allowing communities to protect areas that to create areas that protect the ability of farmers to produce non-GE seeds and crops without the threat of contamination not only protects the farmers growing these crops, it sends a clear signal to high-value international and domestic markets that Oregon takes these issues seriously and has rules in place to prevent against GE contamination. Regardless of whether one is a supporter of GE technology or not, it is clear that there is tremendous value in preserving traditional seed stocks and in developing new seed and crop varieties through traditional breeding techniques. If the state of Oregon is unwilling to establish protections for farmers, it should not stand in the way of local communities doing so. The question here is not one of coexistence or not. It's the question of managed coexistence. We advocate for a managed coexistence. Right now, we have an unmanaged situation. We think that managed coexistence equals peaceful coexistence, and we appreciate Representative Wilson's comments today in support of the bill ultimately. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to call up...
Any questions?
Ms. Klein, may I answer a question that Ms. Berto asked?
You can.
Cannot.
Just be aware you are cutting into somebody else's time, but you can. Go ahead. Do one.
We
somebody
can
make
the
up
stats.
For it.
Yeah, yeah. It's been increasing about 10% per year in the United States, and it's grown from about 3 to 4% total in vegetables and crops of the market in 2004 to over 14% in 2015.
We can send you the USDA
Thank
stats.
You. Thank you very much. Okay, so I need to call up now on the other side of this bill, Barry Beshoe, Debbie Crocker, and Kevin Richards. And typically we have people from more than 100 miles come first. I think there's several people who are here from Southern Oregon who didn't indicate they're from 100 miles, but I think we'll get to everybody anyway, so there shouldn't be a risk of no one getting to talk. But I know Mr. Richards is from more than 100 miles, so thanks for coming so far. Okay, please.
Chair Klim and members of the committee, my name is Barry Beshoe. I farm near Sandy, Oregon, where my wife and I raise flowers, vegetables, berries, and pumpkins for retail sale. We have utilized conventional biotech, and this spring are scheduled to plant our first organic crop on our small farm. I'm honored to be here as president of the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation, representing the state's largest and only general agricultural farmer organization. Our members are proud of Oregon's diverse agriculture and its over 220 commodities as they embrace all types of production methods. In 2013, farmers, ranchers, and foresters in the legislature passed a bipartisan seed preemption bill that clarified that the best choices for crop types and production methods should be made by farmers and not government. Unfortunately, HB 2469 is an attempt to undo that and to permanently put agriculture at risk. To let government stigmatize one crop over another and to pick winners and losers in the lottery that he's farming is at best poor public policy and at worst destructive of the beauty that is Oregon agriculture. I was selected by Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack to serve on the Agriculture and Biotechnology in the 21st Century Committee, along with 21 other members from across the United States representing all forms of agriculture. We met several times with two separate charges as we discussed the importance of diversity and the successes of coexistence nationwide. Coexistence is not something new. It happens on small farms, big farms, and across fences. Oregon's diversity is a testament to its success. To prove my point, I refer to a nationwide survey of organic growers conducted by USDA and the National Agricultural Statistics Service. Growers were asked several questions about production and crop, including questions about economic loss as a result of the inadvertent presence of biotech. Nationwide, only 1% of those growers indicated any loss. None of them were from Oregon. I point out that these were self-reported anonymously, and no evidence of alleged losses was required. Less than 1% of all ag land in the United States is under organic cultivation and accounts for less than 5% of nationwide food sales. Additionally, it is my understanding that no growers have taken advantage of ODA's or USDA's mediation programs alleging any problems. And finally, no grower has ever lost their organic certification due to the inadvertent presence of GE material. If growers have entered into restrictive contracts for a higher profit margin, that responsibility must be borne by them and not their neighbors. Farmers that are willing to work together with their neighbors and to collaborate with each other can work out planting dates and crop types to mitigate potential challenges. Unfortunately for some, it appears that banning their neighbor's crop is preferable to talking over the fence and seeking solutions. How incredibly sad and dangerous. The destruction of crops in Jackson County was unforgivable. If demonizing our neighbors is a solution, we have a much bigger problem than this bill could ever address. I urge you to recognize the value of all forms of agriculture and crop types. I urge you to reject the notion that one farmer should be prioritized by government over another. The value of biotech now and in the future is more important than ever. The bill is seeking a solution for a non-existent problem. Please keep our seed preemption laws intact and oppose House Bill 2469.
Thank you. Welcome.
Yes, thank you, Representative Klam and the board for having me here today. My name is Debbie Crocker. Our family farm is in South Benton County around the Monroe area. I'm here to talk about the Benton County measure that, if you remember, back in 2015, that was on the ballot. It would have prohibited the cultivation of GMOs in Benton County. It mandated that all GMOs be destroyed within 90 days. On our farm, our family farm, we grow grass seed, hazelnut trees, mint oil, sugar beet seed, pumpkin seed, green beans. We're a very diversified farm. This measure threatened our family farm. It would have forced us to tear out our sugar beet crop. It would have been a loss of revenue of about $300,000 to our farm. My family chose to support me, and I chose to step up and be involved in this measure. I actually ended up being the lead for the No Coalition. It was actually a very big challenge for me. I'm not a political person, but it was a good opportunity for me to learn about exactly how our county works. I got the pleasure of getting to know our county commissioners who actually opposed this measure because they did not want the responsibility of governing this issue and that the cost of the county would be substantial. I also chose to be in many different, well, I didn't choose because I was in four or five different forums where each side, of course, gets to share with the public about how they stand with the issue. And it was an opportunity for me to meet the people in our county that really don't understand who we are. You know, who are the family farms that my husband's a fourth generation and my children have chosen to come back to the farm. So they're my fifth generation. And, you know, there were so many people that didn't even know we existed out there. And I got to meet people that didn't understand about GMOs and didn't understand about the sugar beet seed that we grew. I'm not the scientist. I was just the farmer that represented the people of the community, that long-term people of the community. You know, it was a timely thing for me to be involved in. I had to, it was our harvest time or our planting time, and it was not a good feeling when it's a farmer versus farmer. You know, we live in a community, we have great neighbors. And we all work together. We have organic, we have conventional, we have GMO, and it's an odd feeling when you're having to debate someone that has the same type of lifestyle that you do. So today, as a family farmer, I'm here to urge you to vote no on this House Bill 2469. Let's leave the control with the state. And thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Kevin Richards. I operate a family farm in Madras in the high desert where I grow hybrid carrot seed, Kentucky bluegrass seed, peppermint oil, hay, and wheat. And in 2006, when GE alfalfa, herbicide-tolerant alfalfa, became available, my family farm was an early adopter. So I'm familiar not just with conventional crops in Oregon, but also GE crops and high-value seed crops. I also previously represented American Farm Bureau Federation on issues related to biotechnology, so I'm familiar with the coordinated framework and the federal regulatory process for as it relates to biotechnology. A foundational principle of sound policy and sound regulation is that it be based on science, that it has based on real risk, and that it's predictable. And Measure 2469 would abandon those principles and leave regulation at the whim of local politics and local ideology. And I think that I worry about the cost that that poses, the immediate cost that it poses for farmers in terms of having to tear crop out. in 2006 when we started raising herbicide-tolerant alfalfa. Shortly thereafter, it went to the courts and was litigated, and we faced the risk of tearing those established crops out if the courts ruled against the regulatory deregulation. And Measure 2469 would make that risk just perpetual for farmers. That risk would never go away. The federal regulatory process has been in place for over 30 years. It's one of the most respected and predictable regulatory processes for agriculture in the world. There's not just USDA, but FDA and EPA are involved in the coordinated framework. And it takes years often for a new product to make its way through the regulatory framework before it becomes receives a deregulated status and becomes commercially available. And that's on top of the many years of regulated laboratory work, research trials, and commercial trials before crops are actually planted. And so, these are some of the most this is some of the most precise agriculture technology and some of the most regulated agriculture products that we've ever grown. We have a wealth of information about the products that receive regulatory approval. And so that predictability, that science is something that I urge you to put your faith in and to, as my fellow farmers have said, there's not a need to pit one type of farming against another. We're not asking to pick a winner or a loser and say that the future of agriculture in Oregon relies on this technology. We're asking you to let farmers choose for themselves. Of course, some of them will be quite successful with organic and conventional and traditional crops, and some will be adopters of successful biotechnology and thrive on that innovation. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Now I'd like to call up Mary Alionis, and Ann Golden and Barbara Richard. And I'm guessing some of you are from more than 100 miles away, but probably didn't know to indicate that. So thank you. Yeah, thank you for driving so far to talk with us. And you can go in whatever order you like. I've got Mary, then Ann, then Barbara, but it doesn't matter to me.
Hi, I'm Mary Alionis, and my husband and I have a certified organic farm in Southern Oregon, and I'm here in support of Bill 2469. This is our 27th season farming and operating a farm business. We grow a wide range of fresh market vegetables and seed crops, and I have an on-farm store which provides a venue for our fellow farmers and supplies local products to our community. In May, we will again plant a variety of corn called Glass Gem, a beautiful specialty corn that's been selected over decades by a farmer in Oregon, in Oklahoma, a part Cherokee farmer, Carl Barnes. Our crop from last year was tested in January to confirm that it was free of GE contamination. We've been growing this crop since the ban has taken place in our region. And while this might not sound impressive to you, there's not too many areas in this country where a farmer can feel confident of keeping corn seed free of contamination. Pollen travels for miles. In the amazingly diverse environment of and landscape of Oregon, the region of Jackson and Josephine County is such a place, which is why I'm growing this and why A.P. Whaley Seed Company is happy to buy it from me. The risk of GE contamination is a real economic risk. If my corn seed is contaminated, I lose 3,000-pound seed contract after I've grown it. I also lose my seed stock that I've been selecting and protecting for years. I lose future contracts and my ability to hire workers or buy equipment or expand my store. Farmers and gardeners across the country and the world lose an opportunity to grow this amazing corn. That's the economic reality of GE contamination on my farm. To claim a neighbor could grow GE corn within my pollenscape and my corn would be somehow kept clean, that's just false. As a small-scale farmer, I can attest that specialty seed crop production is an extremely economically lucrative enterprise for me and also for many farmers I know. The economic opportunities for our counties are great. this enterprise simply cannot peacefully coexist. On my farm this year, we'll also have a table beet crop, which is biennial, and therefore impossible to stagger pollen timing to prevent contamination. In 2014, we in Josephine and Jackson County beat the odds, and we won by popular vote the right to prohibit the planting of GE crops in our counties. We won because the people wanted it that much. Support crossed all political, cultural, socioeconomic boundaries because we knew how important it was for our farm communities. The support was awe-inspiring. The GE ban in my county is in precarious limbo right now. I'm from Josephine County. I'm close to the border with Jackson County, so I'm impacted by both counties, and my crops impact their county. I'm upwind of them. Therefore, so my other farmers, my fellow farmers' crops. Oregon is an amazingly diverse patchwork of farms and communities, and my region very specifically lends itself to specialty vegetable seed production. The right thing to do is to return the right of agricultural self-determination to the people, the communities, those who know and are most impacted by the economic ramifications of these decisions. As a nation, if we cannot create places free from GE contamination to grow our seeds, we'll be forced to rely on seed produced in other countries that have GMO bans in place. I want to plant U.S.-grown seeds on my farm. I grow a lot of different seed. I don't want to be buying my seed from other countries. I want to be buying my seed from America. I want to provide other U.S. farmers with that same opportunity by using my seed-growing region to grow seed for other farmers. Please support this bill. It's important to the seed supply of our country.
Thank you.
Good morning, Representative Clem and committee. My name is Ann Golden. I live in Southern Oregon. I split my time between Ashland and our ranch property in Klamath County. My community service includes being a member of the Southern Oregon Angel Investment Network. I serve on the board of the Asante Health Systems, the Jackson County United Way Community Building Council, and I am most proud of being on the board of our family farms. So why am I here? I'm here to encourage the light of day to shed on Bill HB 2469 and to continue the conversation beyond this committee. It's a very important conversation to have. I'm here to ask that you fully support the bill if that's possible, but if not, just continue the conversation to widen it. I'm here and to carry a message from two of the businesses that support our family farms in Southern Oregon, and it's one is called Pacific Botanicals and the other is Herb Farm. Those two are in Josephine County, and together they generate revenue of over $30 million, and they hire over 100 people. And so this is real money. These are real jobs. And as you know, Southern Oregon is not a wealthy community, but we are rich in soil and resources and the opportunity to grow and seed crops and vegetables and, you know, healthy food. I wanted to, I'm going to submit two letters, you know, one from each of these companies, and I just wanted to just read a couple of sentences from one. Herb Farm built its reputation on the quality and purity of the herbal products we produce. The purity of our herbs we achieve through our seed-to-shelf vertical integration is a key competitive differentiator in the marketplace. Organic and, by extension, non-GMO status is the foundation of our purity claims. So who are we in Southern Oregon? You know, we're not Silicon Valley IT. We're not Detroit Manufacturing, right? We're not research and development like the Triangle in North Carolina. We are sustainable ag. And so that's who we are, and that's our brand. And so I would... you know, if you come to Southern Oregon and you get to the airport, you are welcomed by Fox News on the television, and you see the beautiful artwork by Betty LaDuke, and it says, Rogue Valley celebrates farms and farm workers. So I wanted to encourage you to continue to support this bill as it goes through the legislature, and I also wanted to invite anyone here on the committee who would like to come to Southern Oregon. I can arrange a farm tour so that you can see firsthand if you'd like to do some research with your feet and experience firsthand the amazing economic benefit that sustainable agriculture has in the region. It's essential. So thanks.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Clem and committee. My name is Barbara Richard, and I have come here from the Rogue Valley. I have just a few short points that I would like to make. First of all, one of the regions that have passed GMO crop bans, whether it's in Oregon, Washington, California, none of them have encountered any enforcement issues. They're typically self-enforcing, and so there is no local expense for enforcement. That's been the experience. I know that there are serious concerns about the state budget at the moment, and so I just want to make the point that if you pass this bill, it won't cost the state anything. If this bill doesn't pass, it will mean a loss of many crops due to GE contamination. It's inevitable. And that translates to loss of revenue to the farmers, the family farmers, and the state. And I, too, have testimony from two organizations in the Rogue Valley. Both are from Josephine in Williams. One is the Williams Grange, and the other is testimony from Siskiyou Seeds. And they weren't able to come here today, but I would like to have these entered into the record. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mary, have you ever thought about Whistling Beaver as a new name?
We're in Southern Oregon. We don't have beavers. Well, we have one now and then. You're the Northern Oregon.
I just have a slight bias on that issue. Okay. Helly Rudenklau and Steve Strauss and Tim Wynn, please. Sorry if I butchered your name.
Chair Clem, members of the committee. My name is Helle Rattenklaw, and I'm here today to urge you to vote no on HB 2469. My husband and I have a family farm in Yamhill and Polk counties. We are a conventional farm, and we are sustainable, I'd like to point out. We raise about 8 to 10 different crops each year, which include both GE and non-GE crops. The GE crops we've tried include a small trial of Roundup Ready soybeans. We've also grown Roundup Ready field corn, and we produce Roundup Ready sugar beet seed. I like to educate people as much as I can about the farming we do. And one of those things we do is we put out the crop ID signs along the road. You may have seen those along I-5 and other highways. When we raised Roundup Ready sugar beet seed on our farm, we decided not to put those signs out. We didn't dare because we were afraid that people would come in and pull our crop out or destroy it, as has happened in other parts of the country. That's the emotional issue this whole thing brings up. And it pits farmer against farmer, and it increases that urban-rural divide that we're really trying to bridge and not make broader. So we are seed growers. That is our specialty. We're acutely aware of the requirements for seed purity and how to maintain those standards. For most seed crops, those requirements are laid out in the Certified Seed Handbook with specifications for each type produced in Oregon. If your neighbor plants a crop the same type as what you have, you may have to put an isolation strip out, which you can't harvest and market together with the rest of your crop. So that is a negative economic impact to me, but it's something that I know as a seed grower could happen, and we face it every year, and we just do it. It's part of being a seed grower, and it's part of how we maintain genetic purity. For other seed crops, the system is a little different. Well before we started farming, the specialty seed growers in Willamette Valley got together and agreed to a unique pinning system. If you have have grown a certain crop in a certain area, it's kind of your priority, and you can grow it year after year, that type. If you choose not to grow it one year, then somebody else can come in and grow that type of crop in that area. This system has worked really well, and it's voluntary and cooperative, and it works. So there are systems already in place for specialty seed growers in Oregon. They've worked over time to serve the needs of seed growers and protect their markets. Oregon seed growers recognize the need to work together and coexist. And over time, we've proven we can do that without heavy-handed government intervention. If more protection is needed for a certain subsegment of growers, it should be brought up to the ODA. They are the agency equipped with the expertise to handle that task. I request you do not pass this bill, which would negatively impact many specialty seed growers in Oregon by setting up a patchwork of regulation and playing favorites to only one segment of Oregon's diverse agricultural industry. Thank you.
Representative Clam and other committee members, thank you for this opportunity to testify on House Bill 2469. I'm a fourth-generation farmer and operate our family farm operation on about 600 acres northeast of Corvallis, Oregon.
I need to have you say your name as well.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Timothy Wynn. I reside in Benton County. I'm a fourth-generation farmer and operate our family farm operation on about 600 acres northeast of Corvallis, Oregon, just inside the eastern boundary of Benton County. We also operate 140 acres further north, less than a mile from the northern boundary of Benton County. Operating in Benton County and having been exposed to the risk of a proposed county ordinance a couple years ago, which was intended to ban the use of GMO products of any kind, has caused me to have to analyze the true effect of this type of county regulation might have on my family farm. It is extremely clear to my family that any sort of legislation or regulatory action needs to remain at the state level, and therefore I must oppose House Bill 2469. On our farm, we have produced sugar beet seed for over 50 years. Economic and environmental demands have forced the sugar beet industry more and more to depend on genetically engineered varieties, particularly Roundup Ready. The result is that seed we produce and much of the seed that we plant for that end production contains and is GE engineered seed. This one crop accounts for nearly 10% of our farm's gross income and a similar contribution to our bottom line. The proponents of the 2015 Benton County Ordinance that would have banned my sugar beet seed production had no care or understanding of the hardship that such a ban would have put upon my family. We were seen as necessary collateral damage toward their goals. And I urge you to please don't take my options away. I suggest that if we keep this sort of issue resolution within the authority of our state legislation, we will maintain a balanced and well-informed set of regulatory policies that will treat all farmers equally and fairly. In addition, there's another aspect of allowing individual counties the authority to create their own ordinances regarding GE crops. That, I suspect, none of the proponents has considered. Most of the fears of the supporters of GE crops, whether it's imaginary or real, center around concerns of contamination of other non-GE plants, crops, or wild, through the transfer of propagated plant material or cross-pollination. The fact is that these concerns cannot be addressed by any non-physical boundary, such as a county line. Birds and mammals can carry seeds and other propagated plant material for several miles across county lines. Wind is a much larger issue. Many plant pollens can be carried for several miles by wind, and pollinating insects can carry pollen several miles as well. Therefore, if a true exclusion within a county is to be realized, it will be necessary to impose a buffer within the boundaries of each adjoining county for several miles. The assertion that counties could effectively address this type of crop issue is somewhat absurd. Passage of House Bill 2469 would result in a mess of inter-county conflicts and probably a rampage of lawsuits. As a taxpayer, I would prefer not to spend our resources in this manner. I should also add that our farm...
And I need to have you kind of...
Oh, thank you. Okay, it is my suggestion and preferences that we keep management of GE crop issues at the state level, where our legislative representatives, together with our proven agencies such as the Department of Agriculture, can use solid science and fact to help resolve potential problems. Please consider my opposition to House Bill 2469. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Please.
My name is Steve Strauss. I'm a professor at OSU. I've come here to testify against this bill from the point of view of a biotechnology researcher and teacher, speaking as an individual scientist, not for OSU as an employee of OSU. So I've conducted biotechnology research on tree crops, taught classes for almost three decades in this area. I was director of the OSU Outreach and Biotechnology Program in the College of Agricultural Sciences for 8 years, and was also a member of the Oregon Governor's Task Force. I'm here because I know the science and the related issues pretty well. Genetic modifications have been major contributions to agricultural development for thousands of years. They're really the basis of civilization itself. But for the majority of our history, we have not had the benefit of knowing what we were really doing. And of course, we did it very slowly and efficiently as a result. Increasingly, we have such knowledge. Why should we not be able to use it in the most innovative ways possible? The options and power continue to grow impressively, as I'll mention one example in a moment. Thus, the cost of the inability to use these advanced methods will grow. In my laboratory at OSU, we work on a new and exciting family of methods called gene editing, where changes to DNA are directed with a precision and efficiency never before possible. This technique has been the subject of extensive news coverage, including a feature on the cover of Time magazine. USDA has already ruled that many forms of gene editing are essentially just new and targeted forms of conventional breeding, and has chosen not to regulate them at all. There are many new applications of these methods relevant to important Oregon crops, including wheat, grapes, potatoes, corn, and others that have been demonstrated in research. And they include many traits of obvious benefit to us all, including pest resistance, productivity enhancement, and improved nutrition. I know that many farmers, organic and otherwise, are interested in taking advantage of this new and revolutionary method for modifying native genes. Unfortunately, this distinction is not considered by HB 2469. It treats all forms of advanced biotechnology as one thing, a stance that is directly against the global scientific consensus that it's the product, not the method, of genetic modification that matters to food safety and public benefit. These methods are not going away. Their potential and efficiency is too great. So the question really is, do we in Oregon wish to further stigmatize and penalize advances such as this? Do we want to completely stop such innovations that can benefit farmers in Oregon? Do we wish Oregon agriculture to be known for exclusions that are against the scientific consensus rather than innovations based on the best science and the most precise technology? Should we not instead be working to promote coexistence? So to end, I'm fully in support of all forms of Oregon agriculture and that farmers work hard to be good neighbors, but I'm not in favor of one form informed by what I consider to be unscientific and short-term perspectives having dominance over others. Thank you.
Great. Okay, I'd like to invite Amy Van Son, Renette Steed, and Kent Nock up. Okay, well,
should I go ahead? I'll go ahead and get started. I know we're short on time.
Thank you.
My name is Amy Van Son, and I'm an attorney with the Center for Food Safety. We're a national nonprofit organization whose mission is to empower people, support farmers, and protect the earth from harmful impacts of industrial agriculture. We have 830,000 supporters nationwide and tens of thousands in Oregon, and we're here in support of HB 2469. We've worked on the issue of genetic engineering for two decades now, and what we've seen is one of the major harms that happens from growing GE crops is contamination. And you've heard a lot about it today, and I'm here to tell you that there is no dispute that contamination happens. Government audits, farmers, and scientific researchers have repeatedly documented incidents of contamination, and they've happened from every single major crop that has been released into the environment. Over the decade, contamination has cost U.S. farmers literally billions of dollars in lost exports, closed markets, and new episodes are coming up all the time. A single incident has cost farmers hundreds of millions of dollars, and there's currently a $4 billion lawsuit against a U.S. corn producing company for exports that were lost. So this is no small amount of money. Oregon is no stranger to these harmful effects. I believe that wheat has been mentioned, but in 2013, the wheat that caused the crisis to vital export markets, and currently the bentgrass. We're continuing this task of trying to eradicate and find all this genetically engineered bentgrass, which is resistant to Roundup, its main herbicide, at a cost of, in 2011, a cost of $250,000 to $350,000 that Scotts was paying to do this. Scotts has now gotten out of having to have liability for this, so the cost is going to fall to Oregon taxpayers, farmers, and landowners to deal with this. I bring up these numbers just to explain how big of a deal this is. The risk of contamination, as you heard, is also a lost opportunity. People that would be planting otherwise lucrative crops. And I need to point out, you've heard a lot about coexistence, but it's not coexistence when only one side has the burden and bears the costs. That's what we are currently seeing. Only the people, the traditional farmers who are trying to fence out this contamination are the ones who are paying for it. This is actually contrary to hundreds of years of property law that would hold that the person who causes the harm is the one that should have the burden to stop it. And we're not coming to you on equal footing here. We've heard that, the law shouldn't choose winners and losers in the ag field. Well, it has. Currently, the losers are the traditional and non-GE farmers. The federal government has acknowledged that contamination exists, but they've said they don't have the authority to stop it. And it's not part of the assessment that USDA does when it deregulates and approves a crop. They've said that Oregon farmers specifically are going to have an economic burden because of it. So basically, when there's no leadership from the federal government, the courts, both here in Oregon and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, have both said that it falls to states and local jurisdictions to do something about this. And I'll just wrap up by saying that, we're here today to say who should have the decision-making power. Yes, it would be great if the state would do something about this, but they're not. And there's no indication that that's going to change, although we do believe that they have the power to. So please return that power to the local jurisdictions so that, we can have this economic benefit going forward in the future. And thank you.
Kent, and again, Renette, Steed, if you're around or grabbing a restroom break, you're welcome to come join us. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Kent Nock, and I'm from Rogue River in Jackson County.
Thanks for the long drive.
Yeah. Thank you. I used to be a chemist. I still am a chemist. And I used to work in aerospace. I don't do that much anymore, a little consulting. I've retired from that, and I'm a farmer in Jackson County. And I am a member and director of SOSCA, the Southern Oregon Seed Growers Association. I have a letter of support here, which I won't read. I'm a very poor reader. So I have several other things to say about some of the things I've heard. I was at one time a member of the Farm Bureau, but I dropped that when I figured out that I really didn't have a voice, that the policies of the Farm Bureau were established at the national or maybe the state level, and local Farm Bureau members got the benefit of nice social meetings, but the policies were set somewhere else. And when they support this, it may not be your local farmers that you're talking about. It may be someone else. So I was at the original meeting of SOSCA when it was established. There was a representative of, there were several representatives of Syngenta, a Swiss multinational chemical company. They were at the meeting to try to establish the rules for SOSCA. And our rules basically were one vote for one farmer. We had, I don't know, maybe 40 or 50 people in the room. And it turned out that Syngenta wanted to lease land, and it was primarily little plots in people's lawns to grow very small plots of GE sugar beets. Each one of these little plots was supposed to be a farmer. They wanted 30 votes. We didn't have that many regular farmers. The rules were one vote, one farm. They wanted 30. So we said no, and they said fine. They walked out. That's an example of coexistence with big corporations. And as far as Oregon having uniform regulations over all of Oregon, I live in a little tiny valley. You can't even turn a combine in one of my fields. It's so small. So I say that the local people should be able to do local regulations, and we are not looking to impinge upon our neighbors. When you have GE contamination, that's an impingement on the people that receive the contamination. And the right to impinge is apparently what is at issue here. And I urge you to please support 2469. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, I'd like to call up Marie Bowers, Greg Loberg, and Chad Allen.
Sorry, my iPad went. You want to go ahead?
Go ahead.
I'll begin. Right. Good morning. Morning. Chair Clem and committee members. My name is Greg Loberg. I have been in leadership positions in the seed industry in Oregon at the Oregon Seed Association, Willamette Valley Specialty Seed Association. I also served, as have others in this room, on the 2014 Genetically Engineered Task Force that Governor Kitzhaber set up. I am the manager at West Coast Beet Seed Company, located in Salem. We produce a genetically engineered sugar beet seed that is resistant to Roundup. The GE Task Force was charged back in 2014 with identifying challenges, areas of agreement and disagreement, and what other jurisdictions have done or have proposed doing to address the concerns over the presence of GE crops. After a dozen meetings from April to November of 2014, we established what we already knew, namely, that there are ideological differences over whether or not genetically engineered crops can coexist with non-GE counterparts. There are excellent models of coexistence in place, and Ellie mentioned a couple of examples earlier in her testimony. These models of coexistence are in place, and the opponents of biotechnology will not accept those and instead are promoting positions of exclusion. There's a history of over 37 years of crop mapping at the Willamette Valley Specialty Seed Association, and this system is world-renowned. Governor Kitzhaber supported state preemption of local regulation of GE crops, but indicated that he did not believe voluntary coexistence was adequate. At the conclusion of the GE task force, he then proposed in 2015 to move from self-regulation in a voluntary system to mandatory government regulation. At that time, some legislative approaches were introduced that would allow state government to displace voluntary coexistence among growers. The concepts included ideas such as control areas, or market protection districts, administered by the Oregon Department of Agriculture. At the conclusion of vigorous arguments, not unlike today, from both sides, these concepts were not advanced. At the core of the argument was insistence from GE opponents of a zero tolerance for the presence of a GE trait in a non-GE agricultural product, and from proponents of GE, a strong desire not to remove choices from farmers. What we did gain in 2015 was a stronger mediation piece of legislation, the process for when conflict could not be resolved by neighbors talking to one another. Should House Bill 2469 advance, a statewide preemption is no longer effective, and Oregon loses uniform regulations across the state. Farmers already deal with numerous uncertainties around markets and weather, and this would be a significant new uncertainty. I would not want local citizens who do not have the agricultural expertise to make those decisions for farmers. I urge your opposition to House Bill 2469.
Chair Representative Clem, other committee members, my name is Chad Allen. I'm here today to represent the Oregon dairy farmers in a vote against House Bill 2469. GE seeds and products are crucial to Oregon dairy farmers and our ability to reduce our overall feed cost. In the dairy business, our feed costs are 50% of our gross revenue on a good year. And these crops allow us the opportunity to have choices in the different feedstocks and forages that we can grow. A lot of our dairies in the Willamette Valley cross different jurisdictional county lines, and this bill would certainly be problematic. Allowing local governing bodies to make these type of decisions do not result in good outcomes. They're often based on political feelings and fear. There's bad regulations made. We would certainly support this issue to continue to stay and be in the hands of the Oregon Department of Ag, who have the expertise. We've heard lots of testimony of the task force that was put together in the past. We understand that this is an extreme and emotional topic. We cannot regulate based on emotions and fears, but we need to stand behind and look at the science and have it really drive the end results of how this determines impacts in agriculture in Oregon. You know, also, if this was to pass, this would also give the ability for local governing bodies not only rob but take away private property rights. Having choices in Oregon agriculture is really one of the fundamental great things here, and we would encourage you to continue to allow all Oregon farmers to have choices. Thank you.
Chair Clem and committee, my name is Marie Bowers. I'm a fifth-generation farmer in Linn and Lane counties. When you guys passed the seed preemption bill in 2013, I thought, finally, the Oregon legislature is understanding farming and realizing that, you know, I farm in two counties, and we can't have different regulations for different counties. However, the last four sessions, I find myself back here again talking about seed preemption. So currently, our farm is spread out 37 miles as the crow flies. We've been farming a lot of the same ground for over 100 years in the family. We go from Brownsville to Crestwell, and the county line, Linn Lane County line, virtually splits our farm in half. If it were ideal, we'd have our farmland all right next to our shop and our office, but, you know, I know you might not know this, but land doesn't get made anymore, and nothing comes up for sale close by because they're all also multi-generational family farms. We primarily farm grass seed, wheat, and Metafoam. No wheat this year because of the price. But however, we always try to find alternative crops. We've tried growing flax for fiber, which is Satan's crop, radish seed, turnip seed, forage peas, and the last two seasons we've been part of the canola trial. And our canola last year was in Lane County, and this year it's in Linn County. This limited but diverse rotational crops are vital to the overall sustainability of our farm. The current seed preemption status ensures that there's availability for alternative crops exists for my entire farm, just not part of it. We currently don't grow any GE crops on our farm. However, I would hate to see that potential taken away in either Linn or Lane County, particularly if they ever develop a strain of grass that slugs hate. So, because I could definitely use that. So, when you just ban a crop based on the type of technology you use, it seems very, very short-sighted to me. And limits immediate future. It's already hard enough to get 90 legislators to understand what I'm doing out on my farm and to only think that I have to convince, you know, Lane County residents or Linn County residents what I'm doing. And when we're only 2% of the population, that's, I would love to, don't get me wrong, and I'm up for the challenge. But right now, I'd prefer if we could just keep it at the state level instead of adding additional burdens and regulations as Mother Nature, pests, and markets already do that. So I urge you to please oppose HB 2469 and keep seed preemption where it's at the state and keep the regulation of all agricultural seeds at the state and federal level. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Mel DeLiva, and Carol Valentine and Mary Middleton.
Good
also long drives for several of you. Thanks for coming up.
Yes,
thank you.
Good morning, Representative Clem and board members. My name is Mel DiLeva. I am from Josephine County. I'm here today to read a statement on behalf of Siskiyou Seeds. Siskiyou Seeds is a certified organic seed company in Josephine County in Southwest Oregon that specializes in open pollinated and heirloom vegetable, flower, and herb seeds. They distribute widely throughout Oregon and nationwide through online sales, employing 10 people in the seed house and on the production farm. They grow most of the seeds themselves and source the rest from other organic growers in Oregon, many of whom are in Josephine and Jackson County. As they are a certified organic farm with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, the products must be produced in accordance with the USDA's National Organic Program, which prohibits contamination by transgenic GE pollen. Contamination of a seed crop with GE pollen is distinctly possible for beets, chard, corn, some mustards, and can render the crop virtually worthless for sale as organic. The business model is based upon certified organic status, and the clientele looks to Siskiyou Seeds to assure them that they are purchasing and planting seed free of GE contamination. Growing over 400 varieties of crops, including 35 varieties of the aforementioned species, are at risk from GE contamination from deregulated GE crops being grown in Oregon, including Round Ready sugar beets, GE canola, and GE corn. The cost for testing for GE contamination can range between $300 to $400, plus the cost of the seed sample, which is five pounds per corn for corn, and the time expense. Testing of the 35 varieties mentioned above would cost up to $16,000 annually. This is unacceptable. The citizens of both Josephine and Jackson County overwhelmingly voted to ban the cultivation of GE crops in May of 2014, thus putting the economic interests of local farmers ahead of the economic interests of large multinational biotech corporations. We urge you to help safeguard small family farms and vote in support of 2469. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Representative Clem and committee. Thank you for this hearing today. My name is Carol Valentine. I'm here to speak in support of HB 2469. I live in Selma at the southern end of Josephine County in the Illinois Valley. We have over 17,000 residents, and I am here to represent them. I do believe that all local jurisdictions should be able to consider their own agricultural needs at the ballot box, but I ask you to at least respect the ordinance that was passed by the voters of my county. Our reasonable measure allowed farmers a full year to phase out any GE crops. If farmers in other regions choose not to restrict GMOs, that is allowed by HB 2469. That is not what my county has chosen. During the campaign for the GE plant ordinance in our county, I was the organizer for the Illinois Valley. Our town hall was attended by community members from across the political spectrum who were all alarmed that a biotech company from Switzerland, which could not even legally grow their products in their own country, was using our county as a testing ground for their genetically engineered sugar beets in undisclosed locations that turned out in some cases to be very near to farms growing non-GE crops. Our farms in our county remain at risk of contamination because the state has not established any protections. We also have hundreds, if not thousands, of gardeners in the Illinois Valley. Many of us save seeds, and we need to protect the integrity of the food that we grow for our families. Our needs are generally not considered when people talk about this issue, but I ask the committee to keep us in mind when you are deliberating about this bill. Josephine County residents are generally strong on property rights, but they chose to put in place common sense protections for our family farmers because they know that pollen does not respect property lines. They were also concerned about pesticide-resistant superweeds and superbugs that have become hugely problematic in other areas of our country, as well as increased pesticide use that is associated with GE crop cultivation. Genetically engineered crops have recently expanded beyond commodity crops. Genetically engineered apples and potatoes could contaminate common backyard crops. My husband and I grow both of these foods. My neighbors next door at Deer Creek Orchards grow organic apples for the baby food market. My neighbors across the road grow potatoes commercially. Both would face serious loss if their crops were contaminated. I know I speak for many hundreds of others like myself who look to the legislature to stand with our strong farming community in Josephine County and to repair the social contract that has been damaged in Josephine County by supporting HB 2469. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clem, and members of the committee for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Mary Middleton. I'm the director of Oregonians for Safe Farms and Families, and I am here today representing the 16,137 citizens who overwhelmingly and resoundingly voted to adopt the Josephine County Genetically Engineered Plant Ordinance in May of 2014. Jackson County voters, as you've heard, also enacted a similar ordinance that same day, effectively making Southern Oregon a GMO-free zone. Josephine County is a rural community with people from all walks of life, including farmers and parents and business owners, liberal, conservative, progressive, and libertarian alike, all of whom came together on this issue to protect our farmers. Our citizenry as a whole has a strong belief and respect in the political process. During the 2014 campaign, more than 50 farms, hundreds of farmers, and more than 150 local businesses signed on in support of the ordinance to protect our farms and our community. Agriculture is a matter of local concern. Here in Oregon, unlike a lot of other states, our state consists of many small family farms. To date, the legislature has failed to pass any comprehensive statewide regulation to address the mounting needs of small family farms across the state. In this void, I am here today asking you to restore Oregon's home rule and democratic process to allow everyday citizens and small family farms to go to the ballot to address their community's needs to regulate seeds. The will of the people in rejecting GE crops to protect family farms was made very clear in Southern Oregon. Voters across the state should have the opportunity to regulate seeds at a local level. Therefore, I'm asking you to support 2469, which not only honors the will of the people in Josephine County, but will also allow other communities throughout Oregon to put the interests of local family farms above the interests of outside chemical corporations. I've brought with me 182 letters from Josephine County citizens in support of HB 2469. These are copies of just a portion of the letters sent to our elected officials from the region, and I bring these letters to further show support of the will of the people in Josephine County. In summation and finally, I'd like to end with a point of discussion also presented to you by the Oregon Farm Bureau earlier this year. In Oregon, our farmers and communities need flexibility. The flexibility to make their own agricultural decisions, the flexibility to protect our rural communities, and the flexibility to utilize the legislative process set forth by our forefathers. By supporting HB 2469, you can do just that. Thank you again for your time and attention today.
Thanks. Carol, I'm going to take a little liberty here because there's more. I know there's lots of people for the bill who aren't here. There happen to be more against, and so they're going to have the next seven in a row. But I just want to ask you a question. You mentioned apples, and this is something that I've been really struggling with over the last 4 or 5 years since we've been debating this. I married a farmer's daughter. They grew apples for a lot of years in Hood River, and now mostly pears, but we have a few apples left. And there is a product that I think you're probably referring to that's called the Arctic apple, and it's not a pesticide-related gene change. It's to not have it turn brown as easy if somebody bangs it. And so is it all GEs you're worried about, or is it some that have bigger environmental risks, or even the browning apple? Because, you know, we've been there about 100 years, and so if we started doing it, which we don't, and our markets right now don't want GE, so we're all GE free because that's what the markets want. But if it changed and people wanted an apple that doesn't turn brown as easily, and we were there first, and we're growing it, and say we're 10 years into it, and somebody moves in next to me, should I rip them all out at that point because my new neighbor? And that's the kind of stuff we struggle with sometimes on the implementation of these policies. So anyway, if you have thoughts, that's what I struggle with when I think about these things.
Well, I do have thoughts. My first thought is that a community can establish a regulation. They can change it if their local needs change. And any community member can initiate that. So, you know, should we pass HB 2469 in the Oregon legislature? So none of this has to be a permanent decision. Yes, I am concerned about the Arctic apple and the methods that are used to turn these genes off that cause browning. This is new technology, and we don't know what the future outcome of these technologies are. So that is my concern. I think precaution is a wise way to go. So.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Okay, I'm gonna call up Dan Anderson, John Iverson, and Roger Beyer.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, thank you for hearing my testimony today. And my name is John Iverson. I'm a third-generation family farmer. We farm outside of Woodburn. We're right on the Clackamas County, Marion County border, just inside Clackamas County. We farm in two different counties in five different cities. So my big concern with this bill, firstly, is the patchwork deals. If I have five different cities in two different counties, all of a sudden I'm tracking different rules for different counties on what I can grow and what I can't grow. We've grown organic in the past. We've grown GE in the past. Currently, we're mostly traditional farming. I'm a member of NORPAC, which is over 200 family farms in the valley. It grows mostly vegetables. None of the vegetables are GE, but NORPAC's position hasn't been let's ban GE because a lot of the growers grow both crops. Two examples. One year we were growing sweet corn, and NORPAC's wants you to have at least 21 or 30 days separation of planting dates from a GE crop, or at least half a mile separation from fields to make sure you don't have cross-pollination. Our markets don't want GE, and so we do a pretty good job policing that already as growers. We planted a field and had a new neighbor move in and plant GE corn. It was going to stop our corn, so we went and talked to him and said, hey, we had this sweet corn planted. It's going for this. We're going to have a contamination issue. And so we worked with him. The option was he could either cut our corn for silage, or he'd chop his before his got to pollination, and he decided to go before pollination. And since then, we've had a great relationship with him. He knows we're in the area. We always talk where you plant your corn, where you plant your corn, when's the dates, so we can make sure we're working out together. Another example with NORPAC is we farm next to an organic farmer. He's growing organic field corn. Again, the pollination issue would be the same. And so I call this grower every year. So when are you planting your corn? Here's our planting date. We need 20 for organics, 21 days separation from planting dates, or at least a quarter mile separation. And we work that out. And so it's always worked fine. And so that approach has been a lot better for us because we don't have someone saying you can't do this. And so then all of a sudden I have a bad relationship with my neighbor because I feel like he pushed it through. We've always been able to work together through that. Like I said, we're a family farm. I'm the third generation. My grandfather had six kids. Five came back to the farm. I had 22 cousins, all of which have worked on the farm at some point in time. And like I said, I don't want to lose tools that we may need in the future. Someone talked about dousing GE with pesticides. We actually use GE to reduce our pesticide usage. We use way more pesticides on our sweet corn than we do on our GE corn, because with Roundup, I can spray one pesticide. With the sweet corn, I got to use several different ones to try to control weeds, and so we've used it as a tool to reduce pesticide issues. So again, thank you for the time. I really urge you to pass this or decline this. Just with the cost of trying to regulate this with police, they got other things to do than trying to regulate what growers can grow in their fields.
Thanks.
Representative Glenn and members of the panel, my name is Dan Anderson. I'm born and raised in Malheur County. We almost didn't make it here today. Our plane decided to make two landings instead of one, so it was quite interesting.
Thanks for driving so far, but thanks for flying.
Yeah. Well, 8 hours of driving is less than desirable for this time of year. I come here today representing Malheur County. We are a grower of alfalfa seed, alfalfa for hay, corn, sugar beets, onions, all kinds of agricultural crops that are grown in our county. I would virtually say that probably 95 to 100% of our sugar beets grown in our county are GM sugar beets. What this has allowed our farmers to do is to increase their production on the same acres that they've ever have in the past. Their carbon footprint has been decreased because of less use of chemicals, less use of cultivation, less use of labor. The abilities of using GMs are not purely chemical. They are for herbicides, they are for insecticides, they are for many different things that can happen. Personally, I don't want to go back to the 50s and 60s that my father grew up in and having all the same battles and the same lower production. As farmers, we are asked to produce more and more and more on less and less acres. That's what we've been able to do with the genetically modified crops that we have today. I have neighbors that are non-GMO. Personally, on our farm, we raise no GM crops, but yes, we use them. We are livestock farmers, so we buy corn from our neighbors, we buy alfalfa from our neighbors. I found them to be great farmers, and with them being able to raise more and more crops, then I can generally get them a little bit cheaper because of the production that's there. So it's an economic value for me as far as this. Coexistence. We talk with one another. I mean, you meet your farmer down the road. You talk to him. You listen to him. We want to work together. That's the nature of who we are. Another point that I want to make up is food security or insecurity. With the ability of the technology that we've come up with over the years in agriculture, we've been able to do away with some food insecurities. If we go back and we try and regulate these on a county-by-county basis, state-by-or area-by-area basis, how are we going to maintain food for all of our people? Because we want to make sure that everybody has something to eat. And if we don't have the ability to grow different things in different areas, if a organic person can make money doing what they're doing, great, go for it. If everybody could make money on growing organics, we'd all be there. If everybody could go without the GMs, we'd all go there if it was economically feasible for us to do that. So therefore, there's many, many issues, and they're heartfelt. I mean, I come from a small family farmer. My dad started out with borrowing $20 from his mom to get started farming in 1956. So we are family farmers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer. I'm here as the Executive Director of the Oregon Seed Council. The Oregon Seed Council represents the grass seed industry, the specialty seed industry, clover seeds, straw producers, and other components of the seed industry in Oregon. As a matter of scale, in the Willamette Valley, the Oregon seed industry has approximately the same amount of acreage and seed production, grass specifically the major part of that, as all the other 219 crops combined. So we are the dominant footprint in the Willamette Valley, nearly 500,000 acres. Bent grass is one of the species grown in the valley, but I want to be clear, there is no known GE bent grass in the Willamette Valley. The Oregon Seed Council supports seed preemption as it currently stands. Our board has studied the GE bent grass issue for nearly 20 years, but has never taken a position for or against GE bent grass. Our producers and our board of directors for 20 years has recognized the need for all types of production in the valley and has never settled on one, you know, for or against that issue. Jefferson County, Oregon, the other region of the state besides Malheur County, which has escaped GE bent grass, is also a major seed production area of grass seed. to produce in this area continue to be economically producing all types of grass seed, which one of which is bent grass. And after talking with them in that area, they still support preemption as it currently is today, and they appreciate the approach taken by Malheur County, where they think it needs to be solved at a local area. Let the farmers choose what they need to do to make grow what they want to be successfully, but keep the state or the local area out of the regulation of the seeds. So in closing, I'm sure there are some grass seed producers, both in the Valley and in Jefferson County, who would oppose GE bent grass and possibly support this bill. I'm not going to tell you that we're all of the same mind and body on all issues. But the industry as a whole remains committed to coexistence and working together and opposing House Bill 2469. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thanks very much. And I'm going to call up Blake Rower, Steve Van Grunsven, and Thomas Derricks. Whenever you have like a C, a K, and an X together, it's dangerous to try and six.
You don't know how long in my life I've spelt my last name for so many different people.
You would have been good on Wheel of Fortune. Lots of weird stumping. Okay, Blake, I've got you first.
All right. Good morning, Chair Clem, members of the committee. My name is Blake Rowe, and I am the CEO for the Oregon Wheat Growers League. And we're proud to represent nearly 2,000 farms across Oregon that produce wheat. It's one of our state's largest and most valuable crops, with nearly 90% of our production going into the export market. It's also one of our leading exports. Our growers support the principle that growers should have the right to choose what they grow and their production method. When problems develop between neighbors, we believe they should be resolved between neighbors, not in the legislature or at the local ballot box. No offense intended to our democratic process, but it's a neighbor-to-neighbor issue. The large majority of Oregon's wheat production is conventional. That said, there's some very attractive local niche markets for organic and specialty wheats. We support and value all of the approaches. There is no GE wheat in commercial production in the world anywhere, and we're fine with that because our export markets and many of our local markets are not currently receptive to GE or GMO wheat. That said, the vast majority of our growers are very supportive of biotechnology and its potential to improve yields, improve wheat quality, help us adjust to climate change, respond to changes in pests and diseases, and reduce our environmental footprint. We may not have GE wheat in production right now, but we're convinced that biotechnology and genetic engineering techniques are an important part of the future. Right now, we're actively working with our public wheat breeding program at Oregon State University to test some of the newer technologies like CRISPR and gene guns to see if they can help us bring improved wheat traits and wheat varieties to our growers that will be acceptable to our customers. As Dr. Strauss mentioned, some of these new technologies may not be considered GE. They might be captured by the definition in this bill, which would be a problem, but they represent potential for us to capture some of the benefits in a way that's acceptable to our customers. That's in the future. We'll see how it works out. The existing seed preemption statute passed in 2013 was well designed. It protects our farmers from a patchwork of local crop and seed regulations and maintains the principle that growers should have the right to choose the crops they grow. We see no reason to change that current law, and we hope you'll join us in opposing HB 2469. And I might just add just a quick note. We lived through the events with GE wheat in 2013, and if any of you are ever interested, that's more than a three-minute story, but if you are ever interested in hearing how we dealt with it and the outcomes and the results, I thought it went much better than we could have hoped. But if you are interested, we'd be happy to sit down with you and kind of walk you through how it worked. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Steve Van Grunsven, and I'm here. I'm an agronomist for Valley Agronomics in Washington County, which is a joint venture with Wilco Farmers. I also farm a few acres on my own, sugar beets, perennial ryegrass for seed. And I'm also, my wife is a sixth generation dairy farmer in Washington County, and I think that qualifies for a traditional farmer. I'm here to urge you to oppose this House Bill 2469 because seed, pesticides, and fertilizers need to be regulated at the state level. There is no local departments of ag. I'm unsure of who would be enforcing any of this. I mean, the experts are at the state level. In our area, we have conventional, organic, and genetically modified crops growing in the same area, coexisting, and everyone's profitable with it. We have very little issues. Like a previous speaker said, there's communication. It doesn't matter if you're growing a genetically modified crop or a conventional crop. They can cross-pollinate. And without communication, organic crops will cross-pollinate with other organic crops. So it's what we've been doing has been very successful in our area. And it just, to me, genetically modified crops are a form of technology. And it's something that we use on our farms on a regular basis. It's just like a millennial using a smartphone. It's just new technology that we've adopted and been successful with. We don't even know where this technology's heading. We've scratched the surface. Yes, we're using pesticide-resistant varieties, but in the future, there's going to be many new crops coming out with increased nutritional value, increased shelf life. It was just the herbicide-tolerant varieties are just the beginning. So in conclusion, I guess I would just say let's leave this at the state level with the experts of the Department of Ag, and thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Thomas Derricks, and I am against this 100%. Going back to the first speakers here, talking about Oregon wheat, I am a wheat grower. We also grow about 8 different other crops on our fourth generation farm, and I will be the fourth generation. And here in October, I just had the fifth generation born into the family. So when my grandfather started, we started 40 bushel wheat was a great year. I mean, top notch. My dad started growing wheat. 90 bushel to 100 was a great year. Now when I'm growing wheat, I look at my crops, I look at the yield data and everything else, and my protein content, which we need that protein to ship overseas because a lot of the buyers want lower protein or higher protein according to what they're going to use the wheat for. But if I do not get 120 bushel wheat, I look at my agronomist and said, okay, something went wrong here. You know, what didn't we do right? We also grow corn, and we talk to our neighbors, and with the GMO corn across the way, hey, we're going to plant our sweet corn next door, so can you give us our buffer zone of X amount of feet or 30 days? Tell me what your plant date is, we'll go with that. So that's what we do because we're very social people. And on our berry industry that we are in, we were told that we had to be certified by the government, and that was an added cost to our berries that we're growing. And it takes us $1 a pound to grow the berries, and last year I got paid 42 cents. So plus I had to pay the government to certify my crop. So now, due to that, we are out of the berry industry. So we are growing sugar beets for seed, and that is just one of the crops that we brought into our new repertoire to help us make more money. Because, like all the other family farms, we're feeling the hurt right now about low commodity prices and higher minimum wage requirements. So in conclusion, we would just like to make more money and not have any more regulation coming down on us due to a county saying, no, we can't grow any GMO crops in this county.
Okay, thanks very much. And first I want to check, did I miss anybody who didn't get a chance to sign in who's here on this bill?
I've got two more people to call up, but I just want to make sure I didn't. Okay, so Sabrina Riggs and Scott Dahlman, please. Would you like to come up? Wait, we got room for a third. Please. And then we're going to have OD, Oregon Department of Agriculture, up if you can go quickly.
Okay, I can start. Chair Klamm, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sabrina Riggs. I am here representing the Oregon Seed Association, which is also known as OSA. OSA is a nonprofit agricultural trade association that represents the interests of Oregon's world-renowned seed industry. Included in OSA's membership are 46 seed companies that are spread across the state. I am here to state OSA's opposition to House Bill 2469. Genetically engineered crops are already strictly and closely monitored by the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. Deregulated GE crops have been determined to pose no plant pest risk to the environment. Additionally, OSA has already adopted a stewardship policy to proactively establish policies for the cultivation of GE crops. We have submitted a copy of this policy as a written testimony. You can find it under Scott Haar's name on OLIS. OSA's objective for deregulated GE crops or for biotechnology is to follow a policy of coexistence. Our members voluntarily agree to policies, positions, and communications that enhance peaceful coexistence. OSA is well known in the U.S. and around the world as a strong professional organization. OSA is concerned that this bill allows local governments to create a hodgepodge of regulations for GE crops around the state. Farmers often own land in multiple cities or counties, and sometimes a single field can span across city or county boundaries. This bill would not only result in patchwork regulations that are nearly impossible to comply with, it would also put members of Oregon's farming community at a disadvantage on the global market. I encourage your no vote on House Bill 2469, and I'm happy to take questions if there are any.
Great, thanks. Scott?
I'll defer to the first.
Whoever's faster.
I will be faster.
All right.
Thank you, Chair Klamm, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Dahlman. I am the Policy Director for Oregonians for Food and Shelter. As a reminder, OFS is a grassroots coalition representing farmers, foresters, and other users of pesticides, fertilizer, and biotechnology. Here today, speaking in opposition to House Bill 2469. That is because this bill seeks to divide Oregon agriculture, not unite it. The members of OFS believe that Oregon's agricultural diversity is what makes it so special, and we don't want to do anything that tamps down that diversity. We have over 200 different commodities, as you've heard, and different methods for growing those, whether it's conventional, organic, or biotech. Because of this diversity, coexistence is key, and farmers need to be able to work together. We firmly believe that coexistence is possible, and we believe that because growers have existed with their neighbors in the state of Oregon for over 100 years, growing a diversity of different crops and making it work. We support programs that help to foster that, like the Willamette Valley Specialty Seed Association, the mediation program that I spoke to you about earlier this year, and really support those. That is how farmers determine what goes on in their area. Having voters decide what crops farmers get to plant or not is not farmers in the area deciding what works best for their local community. You've heard many different things today. I won't reiterate. You've heard from many great farmers here. The only thing I do want to address is there were a mention earlier of significant losses across the country based on GE contamination. And while it wasn't referenced to specific cases, the only cases I'm aware of where there were widespread losses were related to crops that had not been approved yet. So this bill would do absolutely nothing if you to address that issue. Those are already tightly regulated crops. The last thing I want to say is that no matter what kind of crop you're growing, if you're growing for seed, coexistence is going to be key. We could ban GMOs in the state tomorrow, and there would still be issues if growers are growing the same types of crops. So with that, I've submitted written comments, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thanks. Could you go, and could one or both of you, not to be rude, but depart so I can get the next person walking while, so Lisa, could you come up from the department, please?
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity, board. I'm going to approach it a little bit differently.
And fast.
My name is Bob Beckner. I'm a farmer, a retired agriculture teacher. My family homesteaded north of Salem in the 1870s. I remember my great-grandfather not wanting to let horses go And we had a I grew up with a blacksmith shop on the farm. I think what we're looking at is technology that we're still learning about. But we need to use the tools. It's like, I'm going to blame the definition of GMO and how the bad words or whatever came out. People are afraid of genetics. I'm an animal geneticist, and genetics are a mystery. And we're starting to learn more about genetics, thanks to genomes and tracking and everything else. And but anyway, a good example is Yale just released, Yale University, you cannot say freshman anymore. My take is that GMOs have got a bad name or whatever because people are afraid of genetics or the unknown. And they've always been a mystery. Let me share two new acronyms. GMO, genetic mystery opened. The other is genetic managing or management operation or opportunity is a better word. Genetic managing opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so Lisa, you're with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, just for everybody's benefit. I know that I've got at least one question. I think we have at least one more committee member who does. So can you sort of give us the department's take on what the tools are available to the state since we've preempted to the state level? What is the department's ability to have a state regulatory scheme?
Thank you, Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. You heard a lot in testimony today about some of the work that's been done around this issue over the last couple of years. During the 2015 session, there was specific legislation passed to add on to the state's agricultural mediation program, basically to address many of the issues coming forward from the task force. There was also discussion at the time about the opportunity to implement market control districts. That legislation did not move forward in 2015. In terms of the state's authority for regulation, you've also heard we have control area authority. The state's control area authority refers to plant pest diseases that can be a menace to agriculture, forestry, and natural resources. And I'm not going to, that's kind of an abbreviation of what's there. Back in early 2000, we used that authority in Jefferson County to establish a control area for GE bentgrass for the purpose. At the time, GE bentgrass was a regulated commodity. And the company came forward and wanted to do, for lack of a better term, some production-type plots in anticipation of having that crop deregulated. And the concerns were because it was a regulated commodity, it had not yet been determined not to be a plant, pest, or disease. And so normally when you think of control areas, we're trying to keep things out. In this case, the control area authority was used to keep it in. Since that time, the company has determined it's not moving that technology forward. It's gone through a very controversial process over the last several years with USDA and the deregulation process, and you heard a little bit about that as well. So I'm going to pause there. I'm hoping I got to some of the tools that you were thinking about, and those are the ones that come to mind most quickly to me.
Representative Power.
So I was reading some of the statutes since I was not part of the folks who were on this committee when this compromise was enacted in 2015. So it currently, the state law reserves exclusive regulatory power over seeds to the state. It sounds like from your testimony that's not necessarily true if there's missing pieces that give the state the ability to regulate these things.
Chair Clem, Representative Power. So I think the way when we think about the seed regulatory system related to biotech, is that what you're asking specifically or just seeds generally?
Well, I think this particular statute was part of the Jackson County exemption.
Okay. As a course of policy within Oregon, ODA has looked to the federal framework through USDA APHIS biotechnology for their deregulation process. So if an event or a seed were going through the deregulation process, it's a GE event, we would treat that like we did the GE bentgrass back in 2001. Like it could be a plant pest or disease. But once it goes through that full deregulation process, USDA has determined that it's not a plant pest or disease. And so in Oregon, we have taken that policy as well, much like what we do working with pesticides generally. We look to the federal regulatory framework to set up the policy for working through those issues related to pesticides, and we follow that. We haven't recreated it at the state level.
I'll follow up later.
Okay. Thank you. We actually got everybody in on schedule. I can't believe it. Thank you, everybody, for a very civil discussion. And I'm going to carry over. Let me close the public hearing on House, Representative Brock Smith. Yes.
Well, I think this 3147 won't take long at all.
I think some of the members will kill me if I do it. So
true.
We're going to carry. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2469 and carry over the public hearing on House Bill 3147 and adjourn the committee. Thanks, everybody. And adjourn the committee. Thanks, everybody.